This is the Concealed Carry Podcast, episode number 65. Welcome to the Concealed Carry Podcast, part of the USA Firearm Training Network. I am your host, Riley Bowman. And today I am also joined by one of our newest instructors in our network, and that is Ryan McGonigal. Say hello.
Hey, everybody. How are you today?
I'm so happy to have you on the program today, Ryan. Ryan, why don't you, in a moment, I'm going to give you the chance to introduce yourself just briefly. Okay. Just a little bit about your background and what you've done, especially as it relates to firearms and firearm training. But first, I want to let everybody know that today is our usual news episode, and it happens to land on Halloween, October 31st. So happy Halloween, everybody. We have some special stories relating to Halloween, in particular, a couple of justified shootings that occurred on this day that you may find of interest. And so I'll be taking my children around in our local neighborhood here this evening, doing some trick-or-treating, and I'll definitely be on the lookout for ghouls and ghosts and clowns.
Same here.
So I wish and I hope that everybody everywhere, and particularly our listeners, are safe and that nothing goes awry for you this evening. But first, also, our sponsor today, we'd like to feature our latest Guardian Nation, and it's a membership. It's a fantastic community of like-minded individuals that I will speak to a little bit more here closer to the end of the episode. I hope that you will stick around and hear that, because we have a special announcement, a special offer that you need to know about, and it has application to only today. So don't miss it, and I certainly hope that you're listening to the episode today. All right, so Ryan, now's your chance. Tell us a little bit about yourself, buddy.
All right, well, I just became an instructor. I was very interested in it after, seeing a lot of concealed carry courses being taught here in Colorado. Before that, I served in the Army for 10 years. I deployed a couple times to Iraq, two times exactly, both during very, very dangerous years, and once to Afghanistan, right around where most of the troops started pulling out. Other than that, it's what I did for 10 years. I got injured and I got medically discharged, and now I'm doing this and I love it. It's the best job I could ever do.
Yeah, no. And we, like I said, we're so happy to have you both on our team as an instructor. And, you also are one of our customer service people. So oh, yeah. Folks, when you call in and you're asking about something, an order you placed online, there's a good chance you're going to talk to Ryan. And Ryan is, like he said, he's a longtime veteran. He served our country faithfully and proudly and honorably. And we're just thrilled to have you as part of the team.
Yeah, and I'm just really happy to be here. I'm glad I can bring my experience from the military side of the world into the civilian side of the world and kind of voice my, opinion on the training that we received in the military. Unfortunately, we didn't get a lot of handgun training, as the Army focuses a lot on carbine training, the M4 training, and various machine guns.
Yep, and you'll certainly be voicing your opinion about a number of the news stories that we have today. I know, because Ryan is a very opinionated individual, in a good way. So am I. So let's get into, first of all, our training tip. As longtime listeners will know, that every Monday before our news, we have a training tip. And today is called Random Malfunctions. And what I mean by this is, and, when we have malfunctions occur in reality, right, Ryan, it's random. It's, like you're shooting, you're going along, and all of a sudden a malfunction occurs. Now, obviously, we really don't want those to happen ever, but unfortunately, sometimes they do. And even if it is something that never happens or rarely happens with you and your particular gun or whatever, it is something that you should be prepared to handle. And so malfunction drills is something that I spend a good deal of time for myself just working on, because, you know, it is a critical skill. I mean, you definitely do not want to be in a situation where, much like the people in our Justified stories that we'll be sharing later today, you don't want to be in any of those situations and be pressing the trigger and your gun, you know, not work. So yeah. You better know how to clear malfunctions.
Yeah, you need to know how to act under that kind of pressure.
Absolutely. And I think one of the best ways to train and learn this and also test yourself to kind of get a feel and a gauge as to where you might be in your malfunction clearing skill is to try to actually set those up and train them much like they occur in reality. And that is randomly. And it's difficult to actually experience real malfunctions. And, you know, you can't tell your gun and your ammo that, okay, on the next, you know, shot, I want you to malfunction on me. No, you can't do that. So here's how I do it. There's a couple things that I do. First of all, if you've got your little snap caps or dummy rounds or whatever, that is a great place to start. And so you can, you know, be loading some live rounds into your gun and then randomly insert some dummy rounds. But if you do it yourself, it's not nearly as effective than if you have somebody else load your magazines for you. Exactly. Because then you
can throw a random pattern in there.
Yeah, random pattern. Or I've even had it done to me where I didn't even know that there was, like, there was no talk about a malfunction. It was just simply like, hey, here's a magazine, you know, go do this drill. And then you start doing it, and all of a sudden a malfunction occurs, right? You know, it's like just completely randomly, like you're not even prepped in any sort of way. No talk, no nothing. And yep. So that's one thing that you can do. And that will train, certainly when you're using a snap cap, the round before that is going to fire. And of course, the gun's going to cycle and your snap cap or your dummy round is going to go into the chamber. You're going to press the trigger. You're going to get a failure to fire. So that trains that just fine. You know, a tap rack, you know, clear the bad round out of the chamber. You get back into battery, back on target, and you're re-engaging the threat. But that's only failure to fire. There is another malfunction that I think is good to train, because actually I think it's more common particularly your average shooters, than a failure to fire. In fact, I just think in general it's more common, and that is a stovepipe malfunction, because stovepipes can oftentimes be caused by things that you're doing as a shooter, whether you just don't have a good grip on the gun, limp wrist, you're shooting in weird, crazy, awkward positions, stuff like that. Those are prime opportunities for a stovepipe to occur.
Exactly. Another word, the official term for stovepipe, so people don't know it, is failure to extract.
That's correct. Yep. And actually, hold on. Failure to eject, isn't it?
Yeah. Failure to extract or eject. It's where the round positions upwards.
Yeah. Yeah. So you got an empty brass casing that's, you know, stuck in the action, fails to get out of the gun. Your slide on the semi-automatic is going to be stuck open. And so the diagnosis for this, just in case you don't know, instead of getting a click when you press the trigger, most guns, your trigger is just dead. So like there's nothing going on there. It's just a dead trigger. That indicates the gun is out of battery. So it really means one of two things. It means, you know, a stovepipe malfunction, failure to eject, or a double feed malfunction. And so, you know, double feeds are really tough to train randomly, like to intentionally go, okay, we're going to set up this gun so that it double feeds, you know, at some random point in time.
That's nearly impossible.
That's the one malfunction that I haven't found a good way to set it up and have it occur randomly. No, it just doesn't really happen or work that way. But you can put a empty, already spent casing randomly loaded into a magazine. It doesn't work very good. I mean, like your magazine doesn't either like empty casing, you know, stuck in it. You know, it's not something I do a lot of, but it's definitely something that occasionally I will do. I will do to other people. I'll do to students of mine. And it is fantastic training, because they're going along and all of a sudden, you know, the gun locks up and they've got to, under stress, because and it becomes very stressful for them at that point, because usually they don't know or understand or fully comprehend what's happening. And so that's when you start to see that panic come in. You're like, oh crap, you know, like what's wrong with my gun? And that's That's a pretty good way of testing somebody and helping them understand that when you're in that real life deadly force encounter, you know, like you got to have that training. You got to have it down solid so that you can clear that quickly and efficiently and get back into the fight.
Yep.
Is there anything that you do, Ryan, to work on and train malfunctions in particular?
You know, I like to watch the video, the NRA videos that they post about all kinds of malfunctions. Also, I got a lot of my experience from training soldiers. They have, when you're training 30 to 40 people at a time, malfunctions will happen. Double feeds are more common in large groups like that. The best thing that I've always preached and I always practice is, you know, when you have a double feed and you don't know it, the first thing you want to do is try to rack another round in. And if you can't, place your weapon on safe, drop the magazine, and try to clear the stoppage.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And I haven't experienced personally a lot of double feeds, but you're right. Like when you're in a larger group of training, some of the law enforcement courses I've been through where, particularly with carbine rifles, with AR-15 platform rifles, that actually seems to be where I've experienced the most double feeds. For whatever reason, they seem to be a little bit more, there seems to be more of a tendency there. I think some of that has to do with, you know, like, you'll have the bolt, you know, start to open and the extractor just doesn't, you know, either just, well, actually a lot of times what happens on, brass cases, especially in AR-15s, is it totally just strips the rim of the casing right off, you know, and then the bolt goes back and comes forward and you got a double feed. And not only that, but you have a double feed that sometimes is dang near impossible to fix because you can have an expanded empty case sitting in that chamber and, you know, the rim of the cartridge case just totally, you know, gone. either way, it's still like something you need to be prepared for, you need to train for. And I've seen that happen a time or two in carbine rifle training. So,
yeah, a lot of the time. And sometimes it's not the round or the slide action. Sometimes it's the spring action and the buffer spring being overused and worn out.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I mean, we talk about the, I know I do, you know, talk about the importance of replacing, you know, parts that wear and tear. You know, like take a recoil spring and guide rod on a semi-automatic handgun. Like those have to be replaced every so many rounds. Check your manual, check your owner's manual. They'll usually say something in there, but, you know, a standard rule of thumb, every 5,000 rounds, it should be replaced. And I bet you most people don't even ever think about that.
Of course.
So, you know, like, just know that springs and crap like that, they do wear out. So go ahead.
There's a measurement process that I was an armor in the Army, and there's a measurement process for carbines and rifles that we always used for the springs. You pull a spring out of the stock, and it's a certain amount of inches that it needs to be at for depending on an M16 or M4 style rifle. And if it's not that size, you need to replace it with a new one, regardless if it's too short or too long.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, exactly. That was actually what I was about to prompt you with, is I was going to say, hey, Ryan, I think you were an armorer in the U.S. Army. So there you go, folks. Anyway, I think, you know, like I said, that's our training tip for today. I think we've done it justice, at least for purposes of this discussion today. Random malfunctions, you know, use your dummy rounds, use empty casings, you know, do your best to set those up so that they occur and happen to you randomly. That honestly is one of the best things you can do. I mean, once a person has the basics of, okay, tap, rack, you know, get back into the fight, you know, or clearing a double feed or whatever, then start to throw it at them in a random fashion so it really tests their skills.
Yeah, and I think the last thing I'd have to say is when you're clearing a malfunction, always make sure that your weapon's oriented in a safe direction and it's you keep your finger off the trigger.
Of course. Always. Always. Good words of advice there. So, first news story today. Man arrested at Epcot with concealed carry handgun. I know this caught your eye, Ryan, so yeah, why don't you tell us a little bit about it?
This guy's a special kind of guy. from what I read is he was visiting Florida from out of state. So, yep. No, and then he goes.
He was from Louisiana.
Yeah, Louisiana, and he goes to the Epcot Center with a concealed pistol, First off, like if you don't have it, and it specifically states at the end of the article is like he did not have a concealed carry permit at all. So number one, he's breaking the law, and number two, these public events, these public places, you just know you can't bring firearms or most of the time any kind of weapon in. And the second part of that, there's metal detectors. That's a key indicator of like, no, that's just absolutely not allowed. He's, to me, he's doing a discredit to people who do carry concealed, and he's kind of staining our reputation.
Well, the fact of the matter is, here we have a lawbreaker. You know, this guy's a lawbreaker. Most of your concealed carriers, your CCWers, are, you know, they are law-abiding people. They followed the law. They went through. They got, you know, training if it was required. They got a permit, and they do their best to carry their gun concealed in accordance with their permit and in accordance with the laws. And this guy is exactly opposite of that. I kind of wonder. This is just, you know, my wondering about this whole situation. Is this one of those type of people that would say the Second Amendment is my permit?
Most likely.
You know, because I hear that sometimes, and I get the sentiment. Trust me, I get it. Like, I would love to think that the Second Amendment gives me all the right I need. You know, that's why we call it constitutional carry, right? For some states that you, you know, like Idaho and Alaska and Wyoming and
Arizona,
you know, like where constitutional carry is the law of the land. You know, this guy's from Louisiana, which does not have constitutional carry. I mean, so anyway, the point is he's breaking the law. And even if you are in one of those states that has constitutional carry, and even if you, you should still get a permit, because you're going to have those situations where you're out of state and you can't carry concealed in those other states unless you have a permit that has reciprocity with the state that you're going to. And in this case, you nailed it on the head, Ryan. I mean, it's a major public, you know, attraction, you know, Epcot Center. I mean, like, what do you expect? Of course football, they're going to have a no weapons policy.
Football stadiums, basketball stadiums, you know, amusement parks, anything like that. You can never have a firearm in there.
Of course. So he was actually, I believe if I read it correctly, he was randomly selected because as you're going into the park, you know, some of the people are able just to go right in, you know, after a brief little check, and some are randomly selected for a metal detector. He was one of those individuals that was selected. So he's going through the metal detector. Of course, it's set off, and then he discloses the fact that, oh, hey, I've got a gun. And it, you know, it's possible that it would have ended there had he had a permit, you know, because maybe they would say, hey, you know, you can't have weapons here. And then, of course, he would just perhaps leave and secure his gun and then come back. But in this case, it was like, well, you know, I don't even have a permit. So, yeah, he got arrested. He's got some charges that he is faced with. He was booked into the Orange County Jail. So, good times. Fun for him.
It also says that in the police report, the arrest report, he had no intention of declaring that he had a firearm.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I think that's pretty clear, you know, in the fact that he was trying to enter the theme park.
Yeah.
You know, with a loaded gun. So, yeah, there you go. Don't be dumb like him. And also, don't be dumb like this next individual in our next story. And normally, these people shouldn't be dumb, but there's always those exceptions. So, in Illinois, McHenry County, we have a judge, and there was actually a story reported on a number of months ago, and the story went, "Hey, you know, at the Woodstock, Illinois post office, a gun was found on the floor. No round in the chamber, but it did have a fully loaded magazine. Anyway, gun was found on the floor in this post office. Nobody knew who it belonged to." Well, now we're reporting on the fact that we do know whose gun it is. And
it's a shocker.
you people are just going to bust a gut when you find out. I'm keeping you hanging as long as I can. But who was the owner of this mysterious missing gun, or not really missing gun, missing owner of a gun? The owner is none other than the McHenry County Circuit Court Judge Thomas Meyer. Now, Meyer, the judge, does have a valid FOID card. That is the Illinois Firearm Owner Identification Card. And he also had an Illinois concealed carry permit, which I suspect almost every judge will have something like that, regardless of the state they live in. And so this judge, he had all the proper paperwork and permits and so forth. But there's just one problem with this story, Ryan. And what is that?
He was in the post office. Federal property.
Yeah. You would think a judge would understand that post offices are federal property, and that would be, even for him as a judge, off limits for carrying of any sort of gun or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, Jacob, the founder of the company, he's the one who originally introduced me to that law, because I was kind of unaware of it, you know, at the time. But the key thing that he had told me was, like, the parking lot's even off limits.
Yep.
So.
Yep, that is right. I mean, I'm always carrying, and if I got to go to the post office, I literally have to park on public, you know, like on the street, for instance, you know, near the post office, disarm myself, you know, I'll put it, I got a little safe in my truck. So disarm myself, throw the gun in the safe, lock everything up, walk to the post office, and then walk back. Because yeah, if you, I had a student in my CCW class on Saturday, just even asked this as we were talking about this law. She's like, "You mean even like to go through the quick, you know, drop off drive through or whatever?" And I'm like, "Yes." Yeah. I'm like, "Is that on the post office property?" And she's like, "Yeah." I'm like, "Then it's off limits."
Yeah, I mean, people have their questions. It makes me more appreciative of all the knowledge I gain on this. My biggest question in this situation, Riley, is, what would he have done to somebody who had showed up in his courtroom and made the same mistake?
Yeah, great question. And I think we all know what the answer would be. He would have, they would have been arrested, you know?
Yeah.
So, because, I mean, I'm not aware of anywhere in the U.S. where a courtroom allows any weapons, you know, especially guns. So, yeah, of course, you know, if somebody ended up in his courtroom with a gun, he would be throwing them out, and not just throwing them out, but throwing them out in cuffs.
Or I'm talking about, like, somebody came to his courtroom with a charge of bringing a firearm into a post office.
Oh, sure, sure. Well, he's not a federal judge, but if he were, yeah, of course, you know. I mean, yep. So the question is actually, apparently there was some there, at this time, there's no official charges that I know of that have been filed. Okay, so because it is a federal jurisdiction, and all they could say is that, well, so the Woodstock deputy police chief, the town where this happened in, they looked at the case, they reviewed it with the state's attorney, but there was no charges they could press because they have no jurisdiction. So at this point, it's totally up to the feds as to whether, you know, a federal prosecutor, as to whether they bring charges against this judge. I would be surprised if they didn't, but then, you know, I kind of wouldn't necessarily be surprised if they did charge him. I mean, so
one of the biggest things in this article is that it says the post office in Woodstock didn't have the required notice sticker on its door at the time.
Well, that's...
I mean, this is something that I don't understand because, one, I just know in general it's not allowed. Yeah. And two, if they're going to go off of this and not charge them because of that, I mean, they're kind of going through a loophole there.
Yeah, you know, obviously, I mean, I used to work actually in basically what would be considered building management of federal buildings once upon a time. And every building that I worked in or that I had anything to do with had a notice somewhere about, you know, no weapons, no guns, sort of thing. But are we really willing to take the chance that just because a post office or somewhere doesn't have a sign posted, even though we know or should know or generally know that post offices are federal property, and federal buildings and thus are off limits to guns. Like, are we really willing to take the chance that we're going to get off because we don't see some little sign posted? Yeah, I'm not.
I know I'm not going to take that chance either, but you know, I know that this judge was probably going to use that argument for absolutely. His case.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, do I think he should be charged? I do think he should be charged because I think should have known better.
Of course, other people are charged for it. He is, just because he's a judge doesn't give him any special leeway.
Right. Well, let's move on. This is a this is a great story, and it's kind of close to home. as you know, USA Firearm Training is based here in Colorado, and nearby here we have a little town called Castle Rock. Beautiful little community. And there is a Castle Rock roofing company that is offering AR-15s to customers and new employees. I love it. This is the kind of promotion that I can get on board with. I almost wish, you know, we replaced our roof probably 3 or 4 years ago now, after it got some hail damage, you know, to it. And I almost wish that, you know, I needed a new roof now because I would be out there getting a brand new gun.
I know, and it's great because it says AR-15 or 9mm or self-defense shotgun or a $500 gift certificate.
Yeah, yeah. And specifically, it is that you've got to do a complete replacement roof and or other exterior repairs, but this has gotten a lot of controversy here locally. I've seen several news stories here locally talking about this. Naturally, you can expect that a lot of the not so gun friendly folk are outraged. You know, you know, how dare this company further, you know, proliferate deadly weapons, you know, in the course of doing business. I think it's fantastic, and I'm sure most of our listeners will agree as well. Now, the company does disclaim that they strongly recommend the safe and responsible use of all firearms and that all firearm users take a firearm safety class and that all firearms be kept securely out of the reach of unattended minors. There you go. Very good. You know, the attorneys made them put that. And it is good and wise to abide by those things too. But so it says that it's been a few months since the incentive began, and so now they've decided to take the idea a step further. So originally they were offering this special to customers, but now they're adding it to employees that they hire. So they're in need of hiring, and they have you know, made that an incentive that, hey, if you come on board, and I think you got to do certain things. It says you got to book 10 roofing jobs to qualify and, of course, pass a background check. And provided that occurs, then, you know, they will award you with the bonus of a new AR-15 rifle. And the slogan they're using with this is, get a job, get a gun.
That's perfect. I think it's, and, you know, with the giveaways and that incentive, it's along the same line as organizations, such as organizations that are by my house, gun ranges, that they do their little surveys and you have the opportunity to win a free firearm. I mean, it's kind of the same concept, except they're doing it at a higher rate.
Yeah. Yep. So yeah, there you go, folks. You know, if you're looking to get a new roof, feel free to go check out Weatherproof Roofing in Castle Rock, Colorado. I'm going to guess, you know, if you're not here locally in Colorado, probably isn't going to, you know, be an option for you, but maybe you could move here. Who knows? We need more, you know, Second Amendment supporting, you know, common sense type, you know, down to earth Americans in Colorado to combat all of the crazies.
Of course.
Anyway, moving on. In New Orleans, sometime last year, they passed some additional, this is specific to the city of New Orleans, they passed some new gun control laws. Now, a lot of those had to do with, they expanded the amount of gun-free zones, they added some regulations and additional penalties for gun owners. And So the interesting thing to note is that the gun control measures are not backed by the New Orleans Police Department Fraternal Order of Police. Not a surprise there. We see this in a number of jurisdictions throughout America, where you have basically the politicians that are involved in law enforcement, you know, do certain things, and they're all for gun control. But if you actually talk to the guys on the streets and the guys that know what's going on, that's not always the case. And so what's going on here is we've passed these new gun control measures in New Orleans, and it's done nothing as far as reducing the murder rate, particularly violent crime committed with guns. And so we have two stories here in the show notes. You'll want to go check them both out. The first one where we're primarily focused on right now is from Breitbart.com. The second one is a reference story from that, which is the Times-Picayune, the local New Orleans publication, and they have a very detailed article with statistics and everything to support it. And like I said, the whole point here is that, you know, more gun control was passed with the idea of, hey, we're going to reduce our violent crime rate, and in fact, it has done, you know, nothing, that at least that can be measured at this time.
I don't know a situation where they've increased gun measures and it's improved. I don't know a single case.
Yeah, and there's so many different variables involved in trying to measure statistics like these, but you're right. I mean, in general, we don't typically see, if anything, we see an opposite at times where, you know, if it's made easier for the general public, for law-abiding citizens to have firearms and to carry them lawfully and use them responsibly, then, you know, if anything, then we see decreases in crime rates. You know, we've featured the story before in the past, talking about violent crime rates in Australia, and particularly in some of the provinces there, or states in Australia, some of the states there that they have a big time gun problem. And, you know, I mean, the fact is, like, guns are like completely like, particularly handguns you can't even get, you know, mm-hmm. in Australia, and they have some serious problems down there with regards to violent crime. But anyway, something that, you know, you and I, Ryan, as we were talking during our show prep, that I remember we kind of discussed, I know we agreed on, and this is a good point to make. And you, I think you actually mentioned it first. You talked about how most of the crime is committed by who?
By criminals. They have no...
And specifically, regard. What type of criminals?
Gang members and or yep. groups. Groups are considered gangs.
Yep.
They have no inclination to even follow the law.
Yep. And so, I mean, what I can say with absolute certainty is that gun control, and particularly the gun control that is being, you know, commonly presented by, you know, former New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg and his organization, Every Town USA, and similar groups, the Brady campaign and so forth, that type of gun control does absolutely nothing with respect to gangs and gang violence. Yeah. I mean, because they already have their ways and means of obtaining weapons and so forth. They honestly couldn't give, you know, they don't give a crap about universal background checks. They don't go and buy guns and get background checked. They have their ways. They have their means. Sometime we could probably have someone on the show. I have somebody in mind that I know exactly what he would say as it relates to how do we maybe even, you know, reduce crime, and particularly violent crime amongst, gangs and so forth. And it has everything that he would mention has like nothing to do with gun control. It all has to do with various programs of getting into the cities and working with youth. Has a lot to do with law enforcement and their relationship to these communities and so forth. But nothing he would suggest or say would mention anything about gun control, because he knows, just as you and I know, that it would do nothing.
Yeah, and it's a touchy subject because it harps on a lot of people's emotions too.
Yeah, of course. And that is right there a major hindrance to this issue, to the issue of guns and gun violence and gun control and our liberties, is the fact that, you know, emotions get so involved, which is one of the reasons why we so enjoy having Jacob on the podcast, because he's able to talk about things without, you know, really, you know, having much emotion, just like looking at the facts and looking at what the way things are done, the reality of things, and, you know, okay, what do we get out of that? So anyway, interesting story there. Now let's go to a poll from Gallup. This is a Gallup poll, and this one didn't surprise me. I've seen some other similar things in the past. In fact, I'm pretty sure I've even seen Gallup report in the past a couple of years ago about this very thing. But the interesting thing is that the trend is that this gap continues to widen. And what that gap is, the gap is how is the difference between those that support another assault weapon ban and those that do not support. And where do you think this lies, Ryan? Who is on the top here? Those that support a new assault weapons ban or those that do not?
You know, the article says that 2/3 of Americans oppose assault weapon bans, and I'm looking at the graph and it says 61% are against and 36 are for.
Right.
So, to me, it's, you know, they're targeting the right group of people to ask the questions, because it's most likely a universal group of people. As in, you know, when they come across polls that are exact opposite, you know, they're targeting specific individuals that have one mind and focus, or one idea in their mind of, you know, they're only going to ask people that are for assault weapon bans.
Well, but it's interesting here, though, because what it's saying is that this is the question that was asked to their the folks that were polled. They asked, are you for or against a law which would make it illegal to manufacture, sell, or possess semi-automatic guns? Which is, this is ironic, right? Because it says semi-automatic guns known as assault rifles. And they found just 36% were in favor, meaning that it was a much smaller number, about half of those that only 36% were in favor of an assault weapons ban. 61% were against an assault weapons ban. So it's about half of those that are against an assault weapons ban. In other words, about half of those that are more, you know, Second Amendment supporting, that, you know, those that do not support it. So very, very interesting. And what's curious is we've seen a trend over the last 10 years that back in 2012, for instance, 44% favored an assault weapons ban in 2012. If you go back to 1996, which is when the assault weapons ban, right around when it first went into effect, under Clinton, 57% people supported an assault weapons ban. But what did they realize? What did we realize in the 10 years we had that assault weapons ban? We realized it didn't really do much in terms of curbing violence and violent crime, you know, using assault weapons. And so, you know, that provision sunset in 2006. And ever since then, in the last 10 years, we have not had an assault weapons ban, at least federally. And the support for, this is hard to word. It's a hard thing to talk about and not get confused, right, Ryan? The support of people that, you know, on the side of the Second Amendment on this issue, meaning that they believe that you know, so-called assault weapons, meaning by this we mean we don't think that we call these assault weapons, but it doesn't really matter. Because what the gun grabbers would like to outlaw and what they would call an assault weapons ban would mean taking away, you know, semi-automatic AR-15 style rifles. That's what it is in their mind. And the fact is that almost 2/3 of Americans are in support of our Second Amendment freedoms to manufacture, sell, and possess semi-automatic AR-15 style platform, you know, weapons.
Of course. I mean, in my mind, it's not a
firearm that's going to, you know, if you obtain it legally and you follow the laws, nothing bad is going to happen as long as you make sure that you're the only one that can access it.
Yeah.
And it specifically goes into a statement about Senator Feinstein saying that an assault weapons ban will not end all gun violence, but it will reduce murders, specifically mass shootings. And my counter statement is mass shootings tend to occur by people who illegally obtain firearms.
Well, yes and no. Now, see, this is where I know if Jacob were here, Ryan, this would get interesting because he would actually point out that the Orlando nightclub shooting, San Bernardino and things of that nature, you know, some of these recent mass shootings we've had, these were people actually passed background checks to get those weapons. So they actually did follow the law to get the guns, which actually further proof that even if we had the universal background checks that everybody so much wants, apparently, that it wouldn't necessarily keep those things from happening. Now, certainly there are lots of situations where shootings occur and the weapons are obtained illegally. Specifically, going back to the last story in New Orleans, talking about gang violence. A lot of gang members, I guarantee you, they're not getting those guns legally. So what do assault weapons bans and background checks and things impact the most is, you know, law-abiding citizens, and has less of an impact on those that are, you know, that are already considered criminals. And because they're, we've already hit on that. But I think it's just interesting because, you know, our society is showing as of right now that there is a substantial support for the Second Amendment. And other polls that we've seen recently would indicate this as well. You know, polls that have been done that, you know, ask, are you more for gun control or against? And time and time again in recent history, you know, society has shown that, you know, no, we are not interested in more gun control. Yet it still seems to be a major platform for political candidates, including our own, you know, Hillary Clinton, who has a number of times on the campaign trail talked about how the Supreme Court got the Heller decision wrong, and how, you know, that their whole take on the Second Amendment in recent rulings is wrong, and how, you know, she intends to change that if she can, that she intends to have, you know, more gun control and an assault weapons ban. Well, that is going against, you know, her views on this is not consistent with, you know, I think where Americans are at right now as it relates to our gun freedoms.
She has her own agenda.
Of course she does. It's all about control, right?
Yep.
So, I mean, gun control, which, you know, is the irony here is that that's the term we give it. That's the term that we've called it for a long time. And now that you have the gun control supporters that for some time now, what do they say? They talk about common sense legislation.
Yeah.
You know, it's really about control, but we'll try to make it sound like it's something that's not, you know, bad. Anyway.
Common sense gun legislation. I mean, that's coming from a hypocrite in my mind, because common sense, secret security, classified document control obviously wasn't on her mind.
Spoken like a true U.S. Army veteran. You know darn well what would happen to you if you had care of sensitive information.
Of course. I mean, sensitive information applies to specific firearm systems in the Army, too.
Yep,
so.
Yep. Anyway, we don't mean to get way off into the weeds on that, because this is not a political show. But
no, absolutely not.
But, anyway. Let's get into our first of several justified stories. The first one is a Houston resident that shoots two trespassers during assault, killing one. So in Houston, this was back just like not even quite a week ago. In Houston, we had two trespassers that entered a homeowner's property without permission and began assaulting people at his home. This was early Saturday morning. So I believe it was a week ago this past Saturday. The shooter, so the homeowner, once people started being assaulted, he presented a gun and fired. He hit both men, both trespassers, and killed one of them. So the two men that were the perpetrators of the crime were 24-year-old Hashem Abu Amara and 20-year-old Faisal Abu Amara. Sound like they're brothers. They walked up to people that lived at the home and assaulted them. And at that point, the homeowner went inside, grabbed his gun, and fired at the men. So it sounds like a fairly, you know, open and shut case, other than there's no mention of these two trespassers having any sort of weapons. So sometimes that raises some eyebrows. What's your take on this, Ryan?
My take is that, you know, because we live in Colorado and it's this, the law states, you know, if somebody is in your residence and they intend to commit a crime in your residence and they're unwelcome, you have every right to defend yourself up to lethal force. And I think that, you know, I'm fully supportive of this homeowner. I think that what they did was, you know, in their mind, right. Because one, they can't, I mean, if you can defend yourself without a firearm against just one person, that's acceptable. But against two people, it's going to be a little bit harder, and you know, it could be, you know, massive. You could end up getting hurt very badly, and he took the right action.
Yeah, you know, that's true. I mean, you're right about as far as we do have a very particularly like in Colorado and many other states, there are strong statutes that protect homeowners when their home is invaded. However, what's interesting about this story is that it didn't actually take place inside the home. It's quite clear that it happened on the property and that the homeowner went inside and then came back out with his gun and fired. And so this would not actually fall under Castle Doctrine in most states, since most states limit that statute to within the walls of your residence, of your dwelling. Deputies did say that the shooting is still under investigation, and it's possible. We still don't know a lot here, but it is possible that the homeowner could be charged, provided that, I would say this, that, you know, it talks about these two trespassers assaulting people at this person's home. If they were not, if they were basically not threatening life or a serious bodily injury, and by that we're talking about a serious injury that results in disfigurement, disability, you know, permanent disability, things of that nature. You know, so it is possible. I mean, this is kind of one of those areas where it's like, ooh, you know, this could go actually both ways. It seems
if there was more information.
Yeah, it seems to suggest that the homeowner was doing, you know, what he felt was necessary to protect people, and you know, but we'll just have to wait to see how this one shakes out. But it definitely gives us an opportunity to talk about and make sure, you know, hey, particularly like I can speak specifically for Colorado, and I know many other states are similar, but in Colorado, it states that for you to use deadly force outside of a dwelling, so anywhere other than within a dwelling, that you must have a couple things. One, a reasonable belief that a lesser degree of force would be inadequate. And then, secondly, a reasonable belief that the offending party, okay, these trespassers, for instance, they were an imminent threat, you know, that could result in you being killed or receiving great bodily injury. Okay, so that's the standard. So, you know, we'll see how that shakes out. Let's move on to story number two. Pennsylvania security guards forced to fire on madman driver. Woo! Yeah, I mean, this is a scary situation. Anytime you have a car being used as a weapon, because you know what?
That is very scary.
There's very few things that trump a car being used as a weapon. It's difficult to stop, you know, something that weighs 3,000, 4,000, or 5,000 pounds. What was going on here? Did you read this story, Ryan?
I did. I did a brief overview of it, what it says is the driver, who was identified as Raphael David Cusero, revved his engine and took off, driving straight towards security guards as they confronted him. And he actually hit one of them.
Yeah.
So
Yeah, and I have to ask the question, you know, who are these security guards representing? And they were actually security guards at Allegheny Dwellings. So it was basically a housing complex that has, you know, a controlled entrance, apparently. They've got security guards. This was a man, the suspect, as you mentioned him, Rafael David Caruso, age 31. He was barred from this housing complex. And so he, you know, he was not welcome to come in there or be there. And he apparently approached the entrance, approached the security guards, attempted to come in. They, you know, they barred him from entering, at which point he then revved his engine and drove straight at them. So you're right. One of them was hit. And at that point, the second guard opened fire as Caruso drove off. Which is kind of interesting, for reasons that I'll get into in just a second. So we know we've got an injured security guard. He was transported to the hospital. Apparently he's going to be okay. You know, using deadly force against a vehicle is it's a difficult situation. And a lot of police departments have very specific, you know, policies in place regarding this. And I know Denver in particular just revised their policies substantially to the point that it's angering a lot of their cops, I might mention, because they feel like they don't have as much leeway to use deadly force against a driver that is driving, you know, using a gun or a vehicle basically as a weapon. So what I thought was interesting from this story, Ryan, was that it says that the other guard fires at him as he drove off. And didn't know if any of the shots had struck Caruso, the suspect. And then the suspect did end up showing up at the hospital later with a gunshot wound to the shoulder. So he had been struck. It's typically not advised that you fire at people when they're, you know, leaving
the scene,
when they're driving away. I don't know that they're going to, you know, anybody's going to charge the security guard with anything. I kind of think that they probably don't, you know, blame him.
But yeah. Biggest question was, like, that comes to my mind, would he have still been considered a threat?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because he was driving away.
Yeah. You know, but here's, I think, a lesson learned from this. And the lesson learned is that although these sorts of situations would be very rare for your average civilian, as far as being in a situation where you have a threat to your life and that threat is somebody driving a car at you. I think the lesson to be learned from this is, if this were to happen to you, how quickly can you react? And the answer would be, obviously depends on time and distance as far as, you know, where this vehicle comes at you from. And the challenge is how do you really know if a vehicle is if they're driving at you with intent to hit you? You know, because at the last second they could swerve away. You know, there's certain, I think, situations you could find yourself in that would be potentially difficult for you to prove that that they actually posed a threat to you at that time. The fact is, it is just not an easy situation. But if you are in a situation and a vehicle is coming at you rapidly and you're confident, like, that they intend to hit and kill you, you probably don't have nearly the time that you think that you will have to draw and get shots fired on that driver, that vehicle, fast enough to actually stop them. And realizing too that even if you do strike them fatally, instantly, that car is still moving.
Still, yeah.
So the more important thing, probably more than anything, is just get the heck out of the way.
Yep. There's a lot of factors that come into play when there's a vehicle approaching your direction at a rapid rate. You know, your best course of action is to get out of the way, and pulling a handgun probably isn't the wisest decision in my mind.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you're taking time away from focusing on just getting out of the way to go to a weapon. And so while it may have application in a few situations, I think in a civilian world in particular, it's rare that I would ever suggest that, yeah, draw your gun and shoot them. You know, I mean, this is probably, you know, we could talk about all the potential situations you might encounter, you know, a deadly force situation. And this is probably one of the least likely that you would ever encounter. And if you do, like, hopefully, I mean, just get out of the way because, especially with, you know,
behind something solid.
Yeah. Now, this is an interesting situation because these guys, you know, they're likely, you know, they're kind of in a bottleneck of sorts. It's the entrance into this, you know, basically secure housing complex. They may not have had, you know, I don't know. It's hard to know. We don't know what it looks like. We don't know how things are laid out. It's possible that they didn't really have anywhere they could have gone. But it kind of shows us, I think, that the second guard who did draw and fire his gun couldn't apparently draw and fire it before, you know, the car struck him. So, anyway.
I'm just glad no other bystanders were injured.
Yep.
By both parties.
Yeah, true. I'm reminded too, you know, speaking of firing rounds at getaway cars, maybe a little less than a year ago, we had a situation here in Colorado where a man, I believe actually a bounty hunter, which doesn't mean much in Colorado, just so you know, because anybody can be a bounty hunter. There's not even, any sort of official license or anything. But anyway, a guy that witnessed a armed robbery at a Subway, a sandwich shop, and, you know, he drew his gun to try to stop this robbery. And as the suspect made the getaway, he fired a couple of warning shots into the air, trying to get him to stop. The suspect got into the getaway vehicle and took off, at which point the so-called bounty hunter fired at him as he left. And guess who got charged?
The guy who was firing in the air.
The bounty hunter, yep. I believe reckless endangerment was one of the charges, and I don't remember the other one, but and ironically enough, he contacted us at USA Firearm Training, specifically Colorado Firearm Training, which is our Colorado, our local, subsidiary of the company, you know, asking if we would, you know, help him out in his criminal case. And we're like, no, but, you know, bug off. Like, yeah. Sorry, we can't help people when they're stupid. So
yeah, that's something I wouldn't touch with a 10-foot pole.
All right, here's another one. Akron, Ohio. We have a burglar who attempted to invade an Akron couple's home, and this was two Sundays ago, I believe. And so he came in the home, 38-year-old Dewan McCraney. The homeowner's 61-year-old man and his 43-year-old wife were asleep in their bed, and this was at around 7 a.m. when they were woken by a sudden noise. The couple assumed the sound was a family member returning home and ignored it at least until the suspect entered their bedroom. Now, I'm going to mention something here. It's probably best when you hear bumps in the night that you err on the side of caution and assume it's a family member or somebody. Because,
of course, you don't want mistakes.
Right. Like, you jump out of your bed with a gun in hand and, you know, shoot your... This actually happened where a... Kind of like a prodigal son sort of, you know, a story where a son that hadn't been home for some time, for a number of years or something, and he thought he would surprise his parents and comes home and they weren't expecting it. And they just assumed somebody's in the house. We don't know. We don't know who it is. And the father actually shot his own son. So a couple of lessons to be learned there maybe is, like, don't surprise your parents late at night. Unknowing at their home. And two, know what you're shooting at and what you're hitting. But anyway, so 7 a.m., the homeowners are awakened, but apparently the suspect, he enters into their bedroom. Upon his entrance to the room, both the man and the woman, the husband and wife, grabbed firearms. And although they probably would have been actually potentially justified in shooting him, instead they hold him at gunpoint until police come. Oh, and then also just of interest that the suspect's jacket was found on the couch and a loaded handgun was inside the pocket of the jacket. So, this couple is lucky, and so is the suspect, I think.
He's extremely lucky.
Yeah. So there you go. Once again, not a lot of details on the story, but I think that pretty much tells it. You know, it's typical of what we hear on a week to week, you know, basis, even on a daily basis almost, in this country, where unfortunately, you know, there are homeowners that are forced to defend themselves in their own homes every day in America. And waiting for police, is not your, you know, like, what's faster, you taking your defense into your own hands or waiting for police? And of course we all know the answer to that.
I mean, police have a respond time of, what is it, Riley, 10 to 15 minutes in an emergency?
Well, that's probably pretty typical, especially for you know, large metros. I know in Denver it's averaged like 14 minutes, and that's too late. You know, by that point, you know, you're dead in a lot of cases. So two final stories. And these ones are specific to Halloween. As we mentioned in the beginning of the episode, happy Halloween, everybody. So here are two special Halloween edition justified shooting stories. Then, and these are not necessarily recent. These are actually both from, I mean, they're fairly recent. But, you know, obviously today's Halloween, so we don't have, you know, maybe, well, I'm not saying I hope for something to happen tonight, Ryan. I'm just saying, God, no. You know, we'll probably have a story for next year from tonight. But last year in Chicago, southwest suburb, a masked man entered a store on Halloween night, and he was brandishing what appeared to be a handgun, told two employees he was robbing the store, which also serves as a currency exchange. I wonder what kind of store that is. Anyway, but a customer fatally shot the robber, and this was according to a police spokeswoman. So it's pretty straightforward story here. That's basically how it reads, coming to us from personaldefenseworld.com. You know, so robber enters store, he brandishes what appears to be a handgun, and a customer draws and fires and kills him. The interesting thing is, though, after the fact, it was discovered the robber's weapon was actually a paintball gun. But should that really matter?
I mean, who are you to tell not. In a life or death situation? You don't want to guess.
Yep. I mean, all you know is if someone comes in and they produce a weapon, and these sort of situations happen very quickly. I mean, the only thing to assume is that it is, in fact, a weapon. And to my knowledge, the customer that fatally shot the robber was not charged with any crimes or anything. So, and in fact, he had a concealed carry license from the state of Illinois, along with his FOID card. So, you know, he was completely, you know, law-abiding. He simply carried that weapon for self-defense and did so successfully in this case, in that he defended himself and two store employees successfully.
I mean, just a note on this. I've noticed in locations where I live, going into the gas station, at the entrance of the gas station, it specifically says, don't wear a mask when you come in.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean, no, not a lot of people follow that rule, because I was in there getting a drink and turn around and there's a guy wearing a mask.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I know exactly what you mean. And, you know, why don't – you know, I think store employees and owners should make sure that that is enforced, you know, potentially for them. You know, if they – especially if they have that policy, it's like, okay, no masks. Well, then enforce it.
Yeah. I mean – being who I am with the training I've had and seeing that sign up, and the second I see a guy with a mask, I was on edge a little bit.
Sure.
I wasn't sure what they were doing in there, and, you know.
Yep.
But.
Yeah, you know, it's, I hate masks, you know, because how do we gauge someone's intent a lot of times? And it's by reading emotions and facial expressions, you know, body language. And, I mean, if you see someone and he just, you know, his eyes are really shifty or whatever, you know, it might give you cause for concern, thinking that he's thinking about doing something, or maybe someone's looking at you really intently, you know, really intensely. And, yeah. You know, based on other things, you might go, oh, okay, there's something going on here. But you got a mask, you can't, you know, judge what's going on. It's difficult to see people's eyes and their expressions and things.
Got to watch the hands.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's the only thing you got at that point, though. So, last story, and this is, again, last year, Halloween night. And this one was, again, with a masked suspect. In fact, three masked suspects. And this was in Reading, Pennsylvania. And so, you had a group of three robbers. The lead robber enters the store, the meat market. This is, I believe the name of the store is Latino's Meat Market. The lead robber enters the store, fires a handgun. Two employees, fearing for their lives and the lives of four customers, drew their guns and returned fire. The lead robber escaped with some cash from the market, and his two accomplices, however, died. So three robbers, two out of the three are now dead, and probably rightfully so. I mean, they came in and, I mean, we know that they had, weapons. I mean, because the lead robber comes right in and fires a handgun. I don't know if that was him firing it into the air, you know, just to get everybody's attention or what. It was actually a little unclear on that. But, I mean, you know, there you go.
This is great because it's just a good – it's a good scenario of a store owner or I don't know if it's a company having a policy stating that their employees can be armed to protect themselves as long as they're, you know, I would hope that they are certified and trained properly.
Well, of course. Of course.
One thing is just a little frustrating because you got a lot of retail industries that don't allow it and their employees are unprotected.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah, and I was actually thinking because the story here mentions that there were 9 security cameras that recorded the whole thing, and I was just doing a quick Google search to see if I could come up with that video. That'd be, you know, kind of fascinating to watch, and maybe we can share too with our listeners. So I can't promise it right now because I haven't found it yet, but I'm going to do some digging, folks, and see if I can't post in the show notes of this episode the video from that Reading, Pennsylvania Latinos meat market attempted. Well, I guess he did succeed in robbing. It did say he got away with some cash, which is remarkable considering, you know, the two employees drew guns and fired. But yeah, anyway, so there you go. Be safe out there tonight, folks. It is Halloween. You know, watch out for those darn clowns. I would actually say, though, just in all seriousness, we do know that there are some, you know, crimes that are committed on this night. People that probably take advantage of some opportunities to do so. But please, please, please be responsible. Use good, you know, solid common sense, good judgment. You know, don't. I would be really disappointed if I woke up tomorrow morning and find out that some concealed carrier, you know, shot a clown, you know, unnecessarily or something, you know, with all this talk about clowns going around recently. You know, obey the law, be responsible, and, you know, be well trained. So speak.
I can't, you nailed that right on the head, Riley.
Yeah. Yeah. And so speaking of training, this is our episode sponsor for today, which is our own Guardian Nation membership, which if you haven't already heard about it, you probably have to, you know, because we've mentioned it in the last couple of podcast episodes. We've mentioned it in some of the emails we've sent recently. We're pushing this big time because this is kind of the fulfillment of a huge goal for us as a company, and that is to make contact with, you know, to influence in a positive way, of course, as many people and their lives as possible, particularly as it relates to, you know, good, solid, you know, self-defense and handgun training. And so our way of accomplishing this, because we do have only so many resources, we do have only so many instructors, even though we have probably what is now becoming one of the largest firearm training networks in the country as far as instructors. Like I just got a message from Jacob while we were recording this episode that we just got a new instructor, folks, those of you that are in Florida, we just got a new instructor in West Palm Beach, Florida. So, I mean, we're constantly expanding. We have lots of in-person classes all across the country. Ryan, you're now doing those now too. But we still can't impact all of the lives that we feel we need to just from in-person instruction in all of our various locations. So we started Guardian Nation with a major goal of giving you a lot of the instruction, the training that you need, okay, in a very simple, easy format. So once a month, we are going to have a monthly skill that we highlight and that we focus on that we want you to learn and to practice. And that skill will be reinforced with weekly drills. So each week in the course of a month, there will be a drill, and you'll get, so along with the skill and drills, you're going to get basically an instructional video that says, okay, here's the skill. Now, here's the week 1 drill. Here's the week two drill, and so on and so forth. So each week you'll get a specific drill designed to help reinforce and teach you the skill effectively so that you really get that nailed down. And not only that, but it'll be presented in such a way that you can see how to practice these drills and these skills both on a live fire range and also dry fire in the comfort of your own home. And so we're super, super excited about this. We just got done last week filming some more videos, actually for November's November's drills and skill. So and we did that both live fire in a range and also dry fire in Jacob's home. So we could demonstrate how you would do this in a home as a for example. So Guardian Nation members only will get access to this custom curriculum, you know, handpicked, you know, prepared by us here at USA Firearm Training. And, you know, you're going to get that monthly skill with accompanying drills, weekly drills. Each month there's going to be a bonus drill. Okay. So that's kind of like, okay, you got the basics 1, 2, 3, 4, you know, weeks 1 through 4 or whatever. And there'll be a bonus one that'll be maybe a little bit more advanced or a different take on it, just so you have another thing to kind of look at and work on. Not only that, but there'll be the opportunity for, there'll be another monthly drill that's separate from the regular, you know, curriculum of things. It's only meant for a little bit of fun and training and competition. So meaning there will be a special monthly challenge drill where participants, you know, Guardian Nation members will be able to do this drill and time it, because usually it'll be some sort of like a time. It could be a score. It might depend on the drill and the month or whatever, but typically it'll be something that's timed. And you'll have the opportunity to submit your time, and top times will be eligible for prizes. How excited, how cool is that, Ryan?
I think it's pretty awesome. I mean, I've taken part in a drill where you instructed us on how to draw from a concealed holster, and I think it's invaluable. I repeated that, 300 times is what we were doing?
Yeah, yep.
You know, it's great, and it's fun to do, and next time I'm hanging out with Jacob, I want to test it out on the LASR pistols.
That's right.
And see who's better.
Yeah, yeah. And just so that it's clear, our intent is to have the ability for folks in this in the monthly challenge drill competition to both submit that either live fire or dry fire, primarily, you know, using the CERT pistols and LASR software, because with a CERT pistol, with the laser training pistols, you know, you can use those with your webcam and LASR software to run these drills, and it'll keep track of your shots as to whether you got your hits or not, as well as your time. So your splits and your total time on, you know, however many shots it was, you know, required for that drill. For the live fire drills submissions, we're still working on some of the details on this, but I think, you know, we're going to have you submit, you know, you'll want to record yourself, GoPro, your iPhone or something, have somebody maybe record you doing it, and you'll need a shot timer. Okay. So most likely, just so you know. So, but you'll be able to submit that and qualify for prizes potentially, and see how you're doing, you know, stacked up against everybody else. And you can submit as many times as you need to. So we really want to make it fun. And so I just mentioned two of the huge benefits of being a part of Guardian Nation. One, the monthly skills and drills, the training, the practice that, you know, is so essential. And two, the opportunity to compete for prizes, right? But guess what? What else is there, Ryan? There's a whole host of things. I know one thing you're probably looking forward to, and that is our quarterly box.
Yeah, I can't wait to get that.
Yeah, of what we're calling Guardian Gear. So every quarter, every 3 months, there's going to be a quarterly box that's shipped out, minimum $100 value. So, and by the way, if all you did was get the quarterly box, you pay for your monthly membership fee just with the quarterly box. So that's just a bonus, though, in addition to the great training you're going to get. You'll get access to Guardian Nation online community pages. And get this, you're going to get In addition to a 10% discount on all products in our online store, you're also going to get once a year a gift certificate to attend any in-person class in our growing and expanding 20-state instructor network, which that could be valued at, you know, at a couple hundred dollars potentially even. So you'll get a training certificate, or excuse me, a gift certificate for in-person training from any one of our instructors once a year for being a Guardian Nation member. So, like we said, our whole goal, our whole point is we want to touch as many lives as we can to make sure that we empower you to be as well prepared and trained and ready. And if you achieve that, you know, then what you are, what we call you, is you're a guardian, okay? Similar to sheepdog, okay? We'll use the terms guardian and sheepdog for those of you that understand that terminology kind of interchangeably. But that's the whole goal, is we want to help you become as best as you can be. We want to help you become a guardian. And to do that, please go right over to usafirearmtraining.com/GN to get signed up for Guardian Nation. Don't miss out on this, this incredible training opportunity, plus all of the extras and bonuses and gear that will come along with it.
I'm looking forward to it. Right?
Yeah.
It's going to be great. Yeah. It's going to be wonderful.
And I got to say, and this is very, very short notice, folks, there, you have the opportunity of literally just today. And mind you, this podcast episode is not going out until kind of late in the day. You have a very small window to get your first month of Guardian Nation for just $1. All right. So if you're listening to this episode tomorrow, I'm very sorry. It's another good reason as to why to make sure you're subscribed so you get the podcasts every week, you know, right on time. This is just a one time, literally just a few hours here where you can get into Guardian Nation for just $1 for the first month. A huge value. I'm really looking forward to. I hope that you'll enjoy November's skill and drills and everything else. Now, we are still building out some of this, okay? That's partly why, you know, hey, we're giving the opportunity to get in for just $1. It's not going to be fully, you know, fleshed out, but we're this is our active, like, working on it nonstop all the time right now project. So it's not going to be very long before Guardian Nation is completely up and going. Everything is just going to be, you know, running smooth as silk. So go join now. Don't miss out. $1. And there's a coupon code you need to give to get that first 30-day membership for just $1. And that is GNOCT pre-launch. So basically it's like Guardian Nation October pre-launch. It's spelled GNOCTPRE launch, LAUNCH. Okay. GNOCT pre-launch. All right. And that'll be, actually we're not putting that in the show notes, but if you do get to the online store at usafirearmtraining.com/GN today within the window, you'll see the coupon codes actually right there for you to enter in. Okay. But that'll be removed, once at the end of the day. So, there you have it. Kind of a long sponsor message, but I really want to try to communicate just how excited we are and also how awesome it's going to be, this whole concept of, you know, like everybody in our organization working together month by month by month and week by week by week on all these various skills and drills, and really just, you know, I think as a whole organization, I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm going to be participating in this too. Now, I'm not eligible for prizes, but like even our challenge drills and stuff like that, you'll see my times on the leaderboard. Okay. And I hope, obviously I'd like to stay at the top, but I actually would be super excited to see some of you, you know, best me in those times. So we'll see how it goes. All righty. I think that's all we got for today. Ryan, thanks so much for joining me. This is your first time ever on the podcast. First time probably for you, I think, ever doing anything like this. Have you ever been on a radio show or podcast or TV or anything before?
No, I haven't. I really do appreciate the opportunity to, and I hope to do it again soon.
Yeah, we'll definitely get you back on again at some point here in the near future. So, with that, we'll bid you all farewell. Don't miss us for the Wednesday episode this week. We got something cool, you know, as usual, cooking So we'll look forward to seeing you on the Wednesday episode of the Concealed Carry Podcast. Thanks for listening. Don't forget to subscribe. And, oh, hey, one other thing, too. If you haven't done this, I mean, I suspect a lot of you have already liked our Facebook page and stuff like that. But I have just a little minor request. And, in the past, we've made other requests like, you know, go leave us a review in iTunes and stuff like that, which we sincerely appreciate. Like, if you haven't done that, we'd still appreciate to see and get your review. Secondly, though, if you've liked our Facebook page, I would encourage you to go to our Facebook page and interact with a couple of recent posts there, whether it's just liking or even better, you know, commenting, you leaving us some comments on an article or whatever. That would be huge. And the reason why I'm encouraging you to do this is because Facebook is such that if you don't interact with a page that you like, you know, in recent history, then you stop seeing that page's posts and stuff. And so even though you maybe have liked our page, maybe you've missed out on some things from us. Maybe you've missed out on some announcements or special whatever. And that could be because you haven't interacted in a while. So I hope that maybe you take a moment and go to our Facebook page. Just go to Facebook and type in USA Firearm Training. You should find, you know, the first result will be our Facebook page. And just go and maybe leave some comments and some likes on a couple of articles and things. And so that hopefully, you know, we'll start seeing you again, or you'll start seeing us again in your feed, as we wouldn't want you to miss out on any of the cool things that we got coming. So with that, that's all I got. Thanks again so much. We really appreciate the support, and we'll see you Wednesday. Bye-bye.
A reminder that laws vary from place to place, and we encourage listeners to seek local legal advice to understand applicable laws. USA Firearm Training and the Concealed Carry Podcast strive to share insights and stories about firearm-related incidents and laws, but things could be different where you live, or laws may have changed by the time you listen to this. We cannot be held liable for your actions based on the information shared in the podcast.